Chapter 8, The Truth About Pap. Wake up, I've got it. Dodd hardly heard what was said, but out of habit he responded, Just give me a couple more minutes. No, wake up, I want to show you this. You were the one asking questions last night. Don't you want answers? Besides, it's not respectable to lie around all day like a lazy, house-fed cat. At least tell me if you know the person in this painting. Dodd suddenly recognized the voice. It wasn't his mother's or Aunt Hilda's, as he had originally thought in his slumbering state. It was Dilly's. He was mortified. His cheeks flushed hot red. Oh, I was just pretending to be asleep, resting my eyes, said Dodd awkwardly, trying his best to see what she was holding. Well, obviously you got up earlier, agreed Dilly with a smile as she tapped one of his shoes. Nobody sleeps with their shoes on. Boot told me about your questions and said I could find you here. Dilly misread Dodd's face of embarrassment and added, You know I wouldn't come in unannounced without you first, prepping up for the day. Sure, of course, right, responded Dodd with a mourning voice. He blinked as casually as he could, attempting to get a goober out of one eye, while trying not to draw attention to the fact that he was still squinting. Eventually, the figure in front of him came into full focus. It was shocking. That's Pap, he exclaimed excitedly. How did you get a recent painting of him? It even has his fishing scar, right there above his eye, the one he got last year. I didn't, said Dilly, biting her lip playfully. Pilfering isn't my thing. You can thank your two mostly misguided roommates. I personally would have waited for you to admire it on the wall in the Great Hall. So, you know Pap too? Asked Dodd. Of course, we all know Pap. The real question is how you could have thought that we didn't. Well, he's my grandpa. Your grandpa? Dodd would have begun a decent explanation if it weren't for what happened next. A jolt of pictures and feelings entered his mind. They were strange and complicated. Everything was dark and murky, and there were voices declaring bold death threats that could be heard echoing off stone flooring and walls. And then thick beams crashed down, spewing a heavy, suffocating dust. Blackness, silence, and fear followed, and there was someone struggling, trying to dig out. If he was your grandpa, said Dilly, then why are you asking where he is? Bamboo said his family came and got him. Picked him up, you know, after Highgate. Dodd had a hard time paying attention to Dilly because of the terrifying images. They made his heart beat quickly, like he was encountering a sudden shock in the night, the surprise of an unknown hand reaching for his throat out of the darkness. He gasped and coughed momentarily, feeling as though dust was actually in the room, not just in his mind. The man with the scar in his hand had done something awful, or was going to, shortly. "Are you all right?" asked Dilly, looking at him with a healthy measure of confusion. When he didn't respond, she gave him a knowing look and added, Oh, I'm sorry. It must be hard to talk about. What? Sputtered Dodd, clearing his throat. You know, the poisoning at Highgate. None of us has fully recovered after that tragedy, especially Sushal. I'm terribly sorry about what happened to Pap. For once, Dodd decided to start asking questions and stop pretending to know what everyone meant. No, I don't know. What took place at Highgate? The mention of something bad happening to Pap momentarily pushed the disaster from Dodd's mind and helped him to regain composure. The poisoning, said Dilly carefully. About 3 months ago, Pap was leading a party of ambassadors on a trip to Sush. 10 Kusings from Sush accompanied by 20 Sushlings and Miz, the great mailer. The great what? Asked Dodd. He was trying to follow the story, making sure he understood everything. Miz was a wonderful mailer. He knew how to utilize every animal, and trust me, he knew them all. I enjoyed learning from him. Well, most of the time. I suppose I could have done just fine without studying snakes and spiders. Okay, said Dodd tentatively. Miz was a teacher. No, responded Dilly with a grin, shaking her head like Dodd wasn't getting it. He was the type of treader that would have fed you to a swarm of gizzlers for calling him a bookman. Recently, he trained flutters and horses for Pius and the troops. Some of his accomplishments are legendary. He once used a venoose in saving Treader flocks in Rawl. Who would have guessed that it would prefer eating wolves, dippets, and Kansas over sheep? Thoughts of a venoose made Dodd shudder. Every detail about his near-fatal encounter with the poisonous spider was still very fresh, and Dilly's mention of the creature being used as a tool sounded too familiar. Are you sure Miz is dead? Unfortunately, yes. The group was going to help resolve a dispute between Treaders and Drats. Pap had a great idea. He said he was confident it would lead to peace. I wish you would have explained it to us before leaving. Dilly shook her head in frustration. Bamboo just returned from Sush. Unfortunately, things are still tense there. Maybe the dread is behind that mess, too. After all, he is most likely the person who poisoned Pap and Miz on their way to fixing it. But Pap wasn't murdered, stammered Dodd hesitantly, beginning to feel less confident. This Pap was, insisted Dilly, pointing at the painting. All of them were. 32 deaths from poisoning. It's still a mystery how the Dread got them to drink toxic grape juice, and right before going to sleep in a guarded castle. With Highgate's Triblot barrier, the enemy couldn't have entered or escaped without being recognized, so he must be a master of disguise. Dodd looked earnestly at Dilly and said, Pap died in his sleep at home.
Is that what they told you?
Who? Well, whoever misinformed you, because this Pap died with the rest of them while spending the night at Commendus's palace. Bombu personally helped escort the dead Kusings and Sushlings through the door at Highgate to Rall, and then on to Sush, where they were taken and buried by their families. But what about Pap and Miz? Who took them? My grandpa said Pap was taken by his family, directly from Highgate, and Zerni escorted Miz to his kids in Lower Janus. Let's see, said Dodd, trying to put the puzzle together. Did Bombu ask Zerni to accompany him to Highgate after he got word of the poisoning, or did Zerni volunteer?
Neither.
Zerni was already there. Well, he wasn't in the palace. However, he was staying at Highgate with some of his friends. He and his son had transported the group that day and hadn't yet returned home.
I could have guessed, blurted Dodd angrily. He jumped out of bed and began pacing the floor. I think Zerni is the man with the scar.
What? Zerni is the Dread, the man with the scar, the man who sabotaged Bombu's wagon, the man who poisoned the group. He's the one, I'm sure of it.
Don't be ridiculous, said Dilly. He helped bury Miz because they were the best of friends. Miz taught Zerni most of what he knows about animals.
And have you seen how well Zerni can work a horse? He's remarkable. You can thank Miz for that.
I've seen enough, snorted Dodd, thinking about how calm Zerni was when he rode off leaving the wagon in trouble. He's guilty.
I'll admit, Zerni's been acting strange lately, said Dilly squarely. But I think it's because he's in shock. He can't believe that Miz and Pap are no longer alive. As a matter of fact, Zerni's son, Jib, hasn't even returned from Lower Janus. The deaths really shook him up, too. He's been staying with Miz's sons, keeping an eye on them.
Zerni's son is in Lower Janus?
Yes, why?
It all fits. They're working together. I almost died by the fangs of a Venusian in Lower Janus, where Jib was conveniently lodging with the family of an expert mailer. Coincidence?
I think not. And if Zerni and Jib are so innocent, then why did they spend the night at Highgate? They could have easily made it back here.
Dodd, you're way too intense, said Dilly. Have you ever tried to get a Triblot barrier shut down at an unscheduled time?
You're talking about imposing upon hundreds of soldiers to man their stations and guard the paths while lowering the protective field. Anyone less than Bombu or Commendus couldn't do it.
Dilly shifted her weight and looked down at the floor. Besides, Zerni has been friends with my family for nearly forever, and his son Jib was a head greenling, doing well before his injury. He's gone through a lot to prove his loyalty. If it were up to me, I would have made him a Kusing, regardless of the fact that he's an ornery drat. I don't blame him for being bitter. He fought the Dread's men with Pap 6 years ago and was injured the same night that Pap bested the Dread. Since then, Pon, Vu, and Sham have all passed him up to become green Kusings. And now you too. Poor Jib, he's left to care for the land and horses with his dad.
Oh, said Dodd somberly. He thought for a few seconds and then started on another angle.
Well, what if Miz is really still alive? Possibly he poisoned the others and faked his own death.
Not a chance, Dodd. The Dread is someone out there. He's devious and evil and a genius at deceiving. But he's not one of us. Don't you think Bombu or Pap or Miz or Sir Lonk or Strad or Yuke or any of the other greats or any of the Kusings would have figured it out by now if he were among us? And if it were Zerni, Saab and his lot of Rawlings would have accused him a long time ago. And that's saying nothing of Saab's uncle Sir Lonk. He routinely takes heartless jabs at Zerni and Jib, so he definitely would have insisted on a full-scale investigation if there were the slightest grounds for suspecting them. Of course, I guess Sir Lonk jabs at everyone. He's a typical Bushi treader from Rall.
Maybe.
Dodd still wasn't convinced, and the look on his face showed his doubts.
I'll give you credit for thinking, said Dilly. She smiled at Dodd sympathetically.
I'm sorry about Pap. I can only imagine what he must have meant to you as your grandfather. We'll eventually catch whoever did this. I promise.
Before Dodd could ask any more questions, Boot came storming through the door. Let it go, Buck, hollered Boot as he whizzed behind Dodd and used him as a human shield. Buck followed close behind Boot with brown goo all over his hands, shirt, and face.
Let it go? I think you'd be disappointed if I didn't share some with you.
Buck did his best to reach around Dodd. His arms waved back and forth in an attempt to wipe the goo on Boot. The smell was disgusting.
I guess you shouldn't have done it, taunted Boot.
Me? I didn't do it. You did it. I was only watching.
Of course, you can smell I observed from a poor angle. I knew a giant Zelda goat wouldn't change colors, even if you fed it Warsing powder and pulled its tail. Remember? I was the one that told you it wouldn't work.
Boot laughed and laughed until tears ran down his face. Dodd had watery eyes, too, but they were caused by his close proximity to the nasty fumes from the goat waste. Buck had been tricked into standing in a bad location, while Boot drugged the goat into diabolical indigestion.
I'll get you, Buck snapped, vigorously trying to dart around Dodd.
Unfortunately for Buck, Boot's good luck stayed strong. Buck slipped on a pile of clothes and proceeded to join them on the floor.
Now look what you've done, declared Boot sarcastically, pointing with a condemning finger. You've soiled our clean clothes.
You keep your clean ones on the floor? Questioned Dilly with disgust. She didn't wait for anyone to respond.
I shouldn't need to ask by now. Come along, Dodd. Let's go get some breakfast before this smell chases my appetite away. Mercy will be closing things up soon.
She held the painting in one hand and grabbed Dodd's shirt with the other.
Can't we keep it in here? Asked Boot, not wanting to see the picture of Pap leave the room. There's a perfect spot right there on the wall.
Dilly looked shocked that Boot would even ask. She almost spouted a list of reasons why it had to go back where it came from, though before she could say anything, she noticed Dodd's hopeful look.
I guess, she said with reservation. He is Dodd's grandpa. Besides, it's not like I had anything to do with you taking it.
Dilly set the painting on Dodd's bed and then led him toward the great hall for breakfast.
Dodd followed, partly listening to Dilly's commentary on the history of Twistyard, while also thinking about the strange images he had dismissed. The only portion of the tour that drew his full attention was the mammoth-sized display of ribbons and medals and awards that littered the walls around Rawl Hall. It was impressive.
Dilly paused for a brief moment in front of the spectacle and let Dodd glance around. However, when she saw Dodd's look of admiration, she quickly explained that Rawl Kusings and Rawlings were not as good as they thought, and shamefully superficial, flaunting their trinkets to compensate for their lack of real ability. Regardless of what Dilly said and the quick arm she used to hurry Dodd down the hall to more meaningful locations, it couldn't hide the truth. Bomboo's guests from Rawl were very talented, even if they were snobbish. Dilly enjoyed pointing out all sorts of things as they traveled a series of corridors, and she took great pride in sharing details that seemed unimportant to Dodd. It was particularly the case when she spotted a row of ornately carved columns and went straight into 10 minutes about the grandeur and majesty of the hall when it had been decorated for the spring ball. It was the girly talk that sent Dodd right back into trying to figure out when the Dread was going to attack. His recent images were too real to mean nothing. Besides, he didn't see much need in listening closely to how Sonny had hoped this boy or that would have asked her to dance, and how Donchie had spilled orange punch on the white something or other that Dilly had lent her. After winding around the castle, until Dodd's stomach began to growl, Dilly had Dodd close his eyes and walk the last bend. It seemed strange. He couldn't understand why she would have him enter the great hall blind, unless she had planned a surprise party for him. It made Dodd hope that eating was their first order of business at his party.
Here we are. Open your eyes, she finally announced, just as I promised.
Dodd was puzzled more than surprised. It wasn't a party, and he wasn't in the kitchen or the great hall. The air didn't even smell like breakfast. She had led him to an open courtyard where 5 passageways merged together. Somewhere en route, between Dilly's explanation of how dashing the boys had looked in their suits at the dance and what color of pink the streamers had been in the hall, she had slipped in a word about where they were going, and it wasn't straight to breakfast as he had thought. Of course, he had been already wondering why it was taking an eternity to find the Great Hall when it had been so close the night before.
I was under the impression that we were going to eat breakfast, said Dodd, disappointed.
We will, but as I was just saying, we took the scenic route so you could see for yourself all the trainers and scholars and nobles that we commonly have here at Twistyard. Look up there.
Dilly smiled with respect as she pointed her finger toward 60 paintings. Those are most of the greats, though I think they could certainly add a few more if they were trying to be complete.
Dodd quickly discovered that many of the faces were familiar, while a few didn't seem to stir any memories. It was fascinating. Simply glancing about the wall flooded his mind with information concerning lots of the individuals, to the extent that it was as though he had known them for years.
Oh yes, there's Pap. There's one of Bomboo.
I thought Boot and Buck stole Pap's painting. They did, the one from the Great Hall. There are quite a few paintings of Pap in this place. He was one of the best.
There's Commendus, remarked Dodd. It's fitting to see him with the know-it-all Book of Commerce in his hands.
And doesn't Sir Lonk look smug holding two swords, added Dilly enviously. If I ever learned that double sword move, I think I could give Rawl a good run. That's probably why Sir Lonk saves his best teaching for Rawlings and Rawl Cousings. Course, he helps Sob the most, scrubbing up to Sob's father, no doubt.
There's Miz, said Dodd. I guess, now that I think about it, he doesn't seem to be the traitor type. He looks good on a stallion.
Do you recognize the horse? Asked Dilly.
I'm drawing a blank.
That song, My Horse. He trained him and then gave him to me for my 45th birthday.
Dodd scanned the collection and marveled at the diversity. Pius stood in full military attire with soldiers in the backdrop. Strap bent in an action pose, swinging a wooden club with one hand and deflecting an object with a shield on his opposite arm. Ascertaini held 5 books and was positioned in the library. Tritacello posed awkwardly in a 3-piece suit with a triblot in one hand. Uke pointed with a narrow stick to a strategic play on a map while wearing an unusually large white hat with a feather out the back and bright white gloves on his hands. Higa sat comfortably in an overstuffed chair with a tray of medical equipment on her lap. Dilly jabbered on and on about many of the people, but her thoughts usually circled back to Sir Lonk, the great sword instructor. She seemed to have an unlimited supply of stories, each testifying of his outstanding accomplishments. Regrettably, however, as she spoke, the air got thicker and thicker with envy. Had she continued much more, she may have greened like a spinach clump and lost her appetite entirely for the regulars of real life. Fortunately, Dodd appeared to need help, and as Dilly focused on her job of teaching, she melted back into a girl.
Come on, she said. This is the last and most important one.
I can tell, said Dodd. They've put him at the top and made his portrait twice as big. He must be really special. In truth, Dodd couldn't have cared less who it was. He was starving and sick of guessing. The bearded mystery man had a cowboy-like hat, unique to him alone, that hung low enough to cast a painted shadow over his eyes and nose. He could have been a rough, tough outlaw from the Old West who had just robbed a bank, or at least that's how he looked from where Dodd was. His questionable appearance made him stick out from the rest.
Is it Jesse James? Joked Dodd apathetically.
No, said Dilly, giving Dodd a strange look. She had no clue who Mr. James was, or anything about the trains he'd robbed.
I can't believe you don't recognize him, she continued, poking Dodd in the arm. Maybe it's the beard. He didn't grow it out until the last year or so.
That must be it, responded Dodd, happy to have an out.
And he is up awfully high on the wall, admitted Dilly. I have the advantage of remembering when it was down lower, where the shadows didn't hide it.
So who is it? Begged Dodd, wondering whether breakfast was over.
The face of the ruffian was intriguing. There was a hint of superiority in his eyes, regardless of his unkempt appearance.
He's the one and only, legendary, Humberone, said Dilly.
That's why the painting's bigger than the rest. He lived larger than life, so it didn't do him justice until they hung an extra-sized one to remember him by.
The name Humberone sounded right, however, it jarred few memories.
Was that his nickname? Asked Dodd.
It depends, answered Dilly. I once heard from Bombu that he was also called Fran Silly, but Humberone didn't want that getting out, since the name implied, well, at least he felt like it implied a foolish girl.
I think Fran Silly is perfectly respectable for a man, don't you?
Dodd chuckled. Fran Silly? No wonder he grew a beard.
Hey, you have to admit, said Dilly, as they left the wall of paintings in search of food, he was the best of the best. In the short time of 50 years, nobody did more than he did. There are enough stories circulating to fill the library with books about his accomplishments, and Bombu said most of the greatest things he did were in secret. That's actually why his painting is the biggest on the wall. Bombu knows plenty of those secrets.
Okay, then if you had a match between Pap and Humberone, joked Dodd, who would you put your money on?
Put my money on? Questioned Dilly with a confused look on her face. You say the strangest things, Dodd.
Well, who do you think would win in a battle of skill? Pap against Humberone.
That's ridiculous. They were fighting for the same causes.
I know, but who was better?
Oh, that's what you're getting at. Why didn't you just ask that in the first place? Humberone, and they wouldn't even need to have a match. Humberone would win before they started.
Dodd gave Dilly a cross look that clearly stated, I can't believe you would down on my grandpa like that.
It's the truth, said Dilly without apology.
He would win just as fast against Bamboo, and in his prime, too. Humberone was unbeatable.
Then why isn't he still around, said Dodd smugly. He was beaten eventually, wasn't he?
Nope, said Dilly. Humberone wasn't beaten. He chose to. Well,
do you know what happened to him?
Not completely, confessed Dilly. She quieted her voice to a sigh, not wanting to be overheard. They were entering the great hall where hundreds of treaders were still eating, a very comforting thing for Dodd to see.
Bamboo wouldn't tell me exactly what they were doing, whispered Dilly.
He was with him when Humberone sacrificed himself. Gramps says he could have escaped just fine, but it may have ended our democracy, so he chose to die instead. I admit I don't know how, though you know Bamboo wouldn't lie to me. It's been 15 years since Humberone left, but just talking about it makes me feel like it was yesterday. He was a one-of-a-kind supernova.
Dilly and Dodd joined a group of greenlings who were already eating, or at least trying to. Toos kept making people laugh. Apparently, he had witnessed Boots' prank on Buck.
I can't believe how those two are always teasing each other, said Sonny, sliding over to make room for Dilly and Dodd.
It's a sibling thing. They can't help it, answered Toos with a chuckle. His hair seemed to be glued to his head, parted down the center.
I'm just glad they mostly keep it to each other. I definitely didn't want to be on the wrong end of the joke this morning.
Daunchy was disgusted, or so she played.
She shook her light brown hair till her ringlets bounced up and down and mumbled to the boy next to her that it wasn't nice, but she did giggle when Toos said wrong end. It conjured a vivid picture in her head of what Toos had just described 3 times in a row. Fortunately, by the 3rd telling of the story, Toos had recognized the material wasn't all table-worthy and had toned down the details of the conclusion, simply calling it the moment of explosion.
Dilly's my sister and we don't torment each other, Sonny interjected matter-of-factly, challenging Toos's theory on sibling rivalries.
Yeah, because you're so different, said a boy who arrived at the table and squished in next to Dodd. He looked enough like Boot and Buck to be a cousin. His wavy black hair, 6-foot frame, and contagious smile drew pleasant glances from some of the greenling girls sitting close by, despite the piggish pile of food on his tray.
That's not true, insisted Sonny, her searing blue eyes connected with his. We're so much alike that you're jealous of us because you don't have any siblings.
I do too, said the boy. He reached over and put his arm on Dodd's shoulder. Here's my brother.
Dodd looked at the boy and decided he liked him, while Sonny sighed, disinterested in their foolish games.
I'm Pone, whispered the boy to Dodd.
Yep, Pone's my brother, all right, announced Dodd in a loud voice. He tried to go along with the gag as well as he could. It was then that the secret side of Dodd, the side that he had only shown to himself in the shower, the side that had wanted to be a ham, came pouring out. He told a tale of 2 twin brothers who were separated at birth and had only recently found out about their true kinship from an old hag on her deathbed.
I doubt it, stated Sonny frankly. She smiled at Dodd and added, but you did tell it well.
Dong-ka-dong! Dong-ka-dong!
A large bell announced that breakfast time was almost over.
10 more minutes before practice, said Dilly anxiously. We'll have to eat quickly.
Dodd nodded his head and searched for the salt to go with the pile of hash browns and eggs on his plate. While looking, he noticed that Sonny was much taller than the others at the table, at least while sitting. She was perched on something that elevated her.
Man, you've grown, said Dodd, teasing Sonny.
The increase is up here, she responded, pointing to her head. Dilly nudged Dodd and read aloud the titles to all 6 books Sonny sat upon. Dark Deeds of the Dread, Deception and Destruction, Dangerous Creatures, Dueling Strategies for Winning, Delirium and Poisoning, Destruction of the Modge. Each book was at least 2 inches thick.
Have you read all of them? Asked Dodd.
No, answered Sonny honestly. I still haven't finished the notes at the back of Delirium and Poisoning. Last night I calculated I would have enough time after breakfast to finish it off before returning the books to the library, though it appears I am slightly squeezed.
She stood up and scooped the pile of books into her arms, quite a physical feat, and then turned to a boy that seemed to hover as close to her as he could, and asked, "Could you clean my tray for me, Juck?"
She gave him an angelic smile he couldn't refuse.
"I... Well, sure, Sonny," he said, blushing, his big ears even tinging red.
"Thanks. I need to hurry if I'm to stay on schedule and finish the interesting D's this week. You can understand how disappointed Ascertainy would be if I missed my goal."
Sonny started to walk away when she spun her head around, curls flying, and added, "Oh, and Dilly, have fun with your games or whatever."
"It's practice," said Dilly.
"Right. Well, have fun and be safe. You know how dreadfully lonely it was for me when you got injured and took leave of this place."
Don't worry, responded Dilly. Solankas promised me that he will personally check the blades before each match to make sure nobody has accidentally slid in a sharp battle striker, like last time. After Sonny buzzed away, Dilly broke into laughter. I think my sister is cute and irreplaceable, she said to Dodd. Having her around is like having a portable library and a mother. But we make a great team. She learns the facts and I get to use them. See, that's just what I was talking about, blurted Pone with a mouthful of food. He put his hand up, covering the gaping hole of consumption as though nobody could hear the food sloshing around, and continued on. Didn't I say they were different? If Boot and Buck weren't so much alike, they probably would stop torturing each other. Who's torturing whom? Called a voice from two tables away. Boot had managed to make it to the hall in time for breakfast and was interested to know what people were saying about him. You, of course, Pone yelled back. He swallowed hard, forcing the food down, and added with a clearer voice, You're the top, Boot. I think you're great. Dilly rolled her eyes. Pone, do you realize Dodd is bunking in the big room with Boot and Buck? What? Gasped Pone, choking on a mouthful of ham he had just shoveled in. And after all the grub-eating I've done, he continued, not bothering to lift his hand anymore, I was getting really close. Not as close as you thought, said Dilly with a satisfied look. At least you can stop with the Boot compliments. The last thing he needs is another ego proper. She looked over her shoulder at Boot, who was wide-eyed in the middle of a story he was selling to a dozen greenlings that seemed to hang on his every word. Dodd raised one hand in apology to Pone. He started to say he was sorry when Pone cut him off. Hey, I'm glad you got the room, he said sincerely, as though the disappointment was over. Besides, after what you did yesterday, you deserve it. It feels good to have 15 of us again. I was starting to wonder if Boot would ever be able to fill the spot. You know, I don't blame him for moving slowly. Dodd looked confused, so Pone continued, this time with bread and jam in his mouth, though he politely reinstated his hand to hide it. After his little brother had to leave 3 years ago, choosing another Kusing must feel like he's replacing him, and nobody can replace Bowie. I can honestly say that Bowie was the nicest out of the whole lot of us, and by far the best at swordplay. I'm getting better, exploded Dilly. Dong-ka-dong, dong-ka-dong, dong-ka-dong. That's it, said Dilly, rising to her feet. We've got to go. Wouldn't want to be late on your first day. Serlant could be brutal. Dodd and Dilly hurried with the clearing of their trays and headed for the open, grassy field out in front of the castle. Boot shouted to them across the noisy room, but Dilly was so bent on being prompt to practice that the only thing they heard was, So Bamboo said I should give it to you. Dodd wondered what Bamboo wanted to give him, and had he known that Boot wasn't headed in the same direction, he unquestionably would have waited for Boot and abandoned going to practice altogether, which could have averted a lot of trouble.